Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. As of this week, there's new muscle in St. Louis journalism. Two stalwarts, St. Louis Public Radio and the nonprofit online news site, the St. Louis Beacon, emerged into a single news and information organization. This new organization brings together two journalistic cultures with one commitment: to provide information and detail designed to help citizens make intelligent decisions affecting them and their community. St. Louis Public Radio listeners and Beacon readers may well be wondering what this merger will mean to them and what will or will not change. I'm Don Marsh, welcoming to the studio Tim Eby, St. Louis Public Radio and the Beacon Director and General Manager. He will oversee this new organization. Beacon founder Margie Freivogel holds the title of editor and will guide news operations. Thank you both so much for being with us today.
Good afternoon, Don.
Getting off to a fast start with this new organization. Congratulations to you both for putting this all together. Tim, let me start with you. What was the appeal in St. Louis Public Radio's mind with regard to this merger?
It was a number of things. One, it was the fact that that we felt that there was a real need to provide a stronger local service than what we were currently offering. And as you well know, and I'm sure the listeners know, the way you do that is through people. You have to have the bodies to cover news. And we could have taken years to grow the capacity of our news organization, but here was the Beacon sitting there doing a lot of the same things that we were doing, covering a lot of the same stories, really the same mission in mind. And so it really was common sense in that way to go about bringing on and expanding the news operation of the organization by looking at how we could partner and create an alliance with the Beacon, coupled with the fact that the media is changing. Media, from a technology standpoint, people are using radio in a different way. People are listening to radio through devices that didn't exist 10 or 15 years ago. And because of that, the geographic monopoly that we have held forever in radio in a certain area has really gone away. People can listen to, if you want to listen to public radio, you can listen to any NPR station in the country through an iPad or a phone or on your computer desktop. And that, the fact is, then we have to be very relevant to people in St. Louis if we want to remain relevant from a business standpoint in the future. And so the combination of those two pieces were really the reasons that I think it was important for us to engage in the conversation with Margie and the chair of the Beacon Board of Directors, Dick Weil, to really begin this this exploration of bringing our organizations together.
And Margie, what was the appeal to you and the Beacon?
Well, I think it basically boils down to we think we can serve the public better together, and that together 1 + 1 = 3. And particularly from the Beacon's point of view, it immediately expands the reach of our work. I think Tim said, and it's true, the world has changed. And one of the things that's changed is that people get their news and information in lots of different ways. And we need to meet people where they are. We need to reach them however they want to be reached. And obviously, we did not have airwaves before, and we did not have as strong of a news report online either as we will now have together.
You know, it's bringing together two cultures, I think I mentioned in the introduction, and that is we're talking about radio and radio journalism, if you will, and we're talking about essentially print journalism. How much of a challenge is that, Margie, to you and your folks from the Beacon?
Well, there'll definitely be some learning on all sides on this, but I think we very much share the mission and the approach to how we're covering things. We're very interested in figuring out not just what's going on, but what's the story behind the story, and to helping people connect the dots among developments that may at first seem to be disconnected but actually are connected, and to give people a sense that they understand over time what the major challenges and opportunities we face as a region, and who's trying what with regard to those things, and let people make up their own minds about what shape the future ought to take.
Tim, you see this as a challenge?
I think the biggest challenge, I think, is to move as quickly as we hope to move in this. Being when I woke up yesterday morning, I actually put a tweet out that said, wow, Our staff has just expanded by more than 30%. And that means that we're an organization of about 60 people, which means that it's going to, you know, for us to make decisions and move faster, we're going to have to be very thoughtful in the way we do that. And I think that's going to be the biggest thing from a culture standpoint of bringing our two organizations together, is to be able to move in the right direction as quickly as possible when you're a smaller organization, whether it was the Beacon or St. Louis Public Radio with a smaller staff. It's easier to move that direction. The larger you get, the more challenging at times it is. So I think to be able to be nimble and adjust on the fly as we grow is going to be one of those things that's a challenge. But it's not certainly something that can't be done, but it just takes great leadership and vision and a belief of everyone to move the train in the right direction.
I mean, if you step outside the studio here today, Don, you can see this unfolding. You can see the work in progress. You know, we have a meeting and we say, okay, what do we need to talk about here? How are we going to communicate with each other? What forms are we going to use to prioritize and figure out what's going on? And it's actually been a lot of fun. We're now 24 hours into this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's all very new to everybody, but it's really been a lot of fun.
When you talk about what form is going to be used, what do you mean by that? What are the options?
Well, so now we're a truly a multimedia organization, so we have to think about, is this going to be an on-air story? If so, what form will it take? Is it going to be a web story? If so, what form will it take? How about social media? And eventually we'll be thinking also, does this lend itself to being part of an in-person discussion or an event? So it's really multidimensional thinking.
What does the Beacon bring to the table?
Well, we have a great deal of reporting expertise and experience, and I think really that's the main thing we bring to the table. And we also have built over the last almost 6 years some very strong support in the community, understanding about what it takes to build an organization that can provide great reporting for St. Louis. And so we bring with us also our community of supporters.
In addition to that, if I can just chime in, I think the other piece that the Beacon brings into this as well is a national reputation as an online news, nonprofit news startup, where there are many of these things happening across the country. But the Beacon has been singled out over its 5-6 years of existence as being one of the leading nonprofit news organizations in this realm, and that has meant a lot of things to us because, truth be told, we're considered, radio is one of the oldest mediums, mass mediums that's out there, and so we've been considered in some ways old media. And so the combination of the two sparks a new energy and interest, not only within the community but across the country as well. And we've certainly seen that interest from both people in public broadcasting and entities in public broadcasting and those that are looking at new journalism models.
But as you indicate, people don't listen to the radio anymore. They listen to their phone. They listen to their iPad. The radio is kind of the third party in all
this. Well, radio is still huge. I mean, it's still reaching more than 90% of the population on a weekly basis. And so radio is not going away, but it's just a matter of how people will use it is certainly going to be changing. I mean, radio is going to be a big part of what everything that we do is, as well as the online and in the text and photos and video and data and all those things that we can deliver on a digital standpoint. The beauty about radio, and that's not going away, is you can always do something else while you're listening to the radio. I mean, somebody may be listening to us right now and they're doing having lunch or cooking up dinner in the evening or whatnot. And so that's the beauty of radio, is you can always be doing something else while you're listening to radio.
Margie, how did this whole thing get started?
Oh, well, there'd been really a lot of interest for many years among members of the public saying, you're both public media organizations, why don't you get together? But more than a year ago, Tim and I began to have some conversations prompted in part by Dick Weil, and we really saw that the stars were aligning to make this the time to undertake a serious exploration of this alliance, as we called it then. We had worked together, we had collaborated, but the time was ripe to really explore an alliance. And then we very quickly came to the conclusion that there were tremendous opportunities in this and that we could best take advantage of them with a full merger rather than just an expanded collaboration.
What got it? Who got it started?
It was really, I mean, it was a few lunches after we had moved here to Grand Center.
Who raised the flag first?
Well, it was mutual. I mean, it really was. I think Dick Weil and I had lunch, and then a couple of weeks later, Margie and I had lunch, and we started to really talk about this. And it really was coming down here to Grand Center and having this new facility where, one, we had the space that would allow us to expand our operation if need be, but it was also, I think the geographic aspect of being here in Grand Center, the Beacon's offices were over next door in the 9 Network building, Channel 9 KETC. And so I think there was that geographic proximity that helped trigger a lot of this as well.
You know, I had an opportunity yesterday to chat with Jan Schaefer, who is the executive director of JLab at American University in Washington. JLab, as many people would know, focuses on helping journalists use and develop new ways to use digital technologies. Jan, by the way, won a Pulitzer Prize during her days with the Philadelphia Inquirer, and she believes that this merger is the future.
It's very in the vanguard, I think, of what we're going to see happening in the future, because it makes a lot of sense. Public radio wants to develop more journalism abilities. We have independent news startups that are doing enterprise stories, like The Beacon, and they need to have those stories amplified. And when you get both of them working together, you get an absolute win-win.
We, of course, are bringing two separate cultures together. Journalism, yes, but two different approaches to it. I mean, on the one hand, you have radio people who are used to doing radio and sound. On the other hand, you've got print people. Does this represent any kind of a concern, do you think, bringing these two cultures together?
Well, it could certainly implode. But I think a lot of independent news startups around the country are very interested in how do you make a good radio story? How do you get your ambient sound? How do you do your music or whatever? I mean, how do you make that happen? Because that's not really in their toolkit right now. So they're open to learning that. I think for public radio, they can get a lot of value added with building a bigger local news portfolio and not just running, you know, the very good but syndicated national programming that is available to them. So I think there's an opportunity to benefit both parties that might help in the merger. And frankly, I will unabashedly say that if you look at the two mergers that have happened this year in the United States, one is St. Louis, the other is in Rocky Mountain PBS with the iNews source. Both of the independent news startups are run by women. And I think they have a very collaborative outlook on things, and I think that's going to make a big difference here.
You know, there are some skeptics who have surfaced, needless to say. And among those voicing concerns is someone here in St. Louis who is saying, you know, we really don't like the idea of taxpayer money being used to help fund something like The Beacon. Of course, they're talking about the dollars that come through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Is that an issue you think should be of concern?
Well, I think all public broadcasters these days are planning for a future in which there will be fewer and fewer taxpayer dollars at their disposal. So I think that if anything, this particular merger is one way to kind of breach that transition and help build a bigger donor base with more enterprise stories, more engagement opportunities, more value added to the community so that you can actually get what you need locally and not nationally.
That is Jan Schaefer, the executive director of JLab at American University in Washington, talking about the merger between St. Louis Public Radio and the St. Louis Beacon. That merger went into effect as of yesterday. With me in studio are Margie Freivogel, who is the editor and will oversee news operations here at this newly merged organization, and Tim Eby, also with me, a St. Louis Public Radio, now the general manager and overseeing the operation here at the—what are we calling it?
Good question, Dan. Right now we're working on the branding. We're calling it St. Louis Public Radio and the Beacon as our news operation. We're working with a local branding firm to explore options for a name and a brand that reflect, I think, the idea of something new. I mean, we don't want, I think, the mission and the value of the brands of both of our organizations. We don't want to lose that, but we also want to reflect something new can tell the community and tell the region and the country that there's something new cooking here in St. Louis from a journalism standpoint. So we're working on it. We don't have an answer yet. And my theory is on this, I want to get it right as opposed to get it fast.
Margie, what do you feel about Jan's remarks with regard to this being the vanguard, the future?
Well, I think that's true. And the world of media has been completely disrupted in the last several years, and we're finding a way forward that we can provide great reporting. And I think this is a potentially a tremendous thing, not only for the St. Louis region, but as a potential model for other metropolitan areas that may have a public radio station without a huge newsroom attached to it and may have a nonprofit news organization that also is somewhat small. I think it's really, really promising.
Well, so does she. And by the way, for our listeners, the entire interview that I had with Jen yesterday is going to be placed on our website, and folks can hear all of it a little bit later in the day. Back to continue our conversation about this merger with Margie Freivogel and Tim Eby in just a moment. Of course, we'd like to hear from you. If you have thoughts about what is happening and why and questions about it, give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org if you'd prefer to send a tweet. We'll take that at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. Now back to Tim Eby and Margie Freivogel, the two people at the top of the newly merged organization. Tim, the question of funding certainly has to come up. A lot of people are wondering if you two organizations were relying on public help. How is that affected by this merger?
Well, the funding mix that we have is one of the really powerful pieces of this, and that is taking, I think, a donor base from St. Louis Public Radio that's very vast. We have more than 21,000 members of the station, combined with some of the great philanthropic support that the Beacon has received over the years. It really gives us a very strong funding mix from individuals, add in the corporate sponsorship piece that we get through the underwriting on the air and with sponsorship on our website, intermixed with some grant money, events money, which we see a really growing opportunity to raise more revenue to support our operation through events and through engagement in the community in that way. And then we do have that slice of federal dollars that we receive through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting that's not going away, at least for now. But we know very much that there's not going to be a significant increase in federal dollars given the state of the federal budget. And so our plans really are that we are seeing a decreasing amount of subsidy support through those types of tax-based funding and an increased need to for us to raise money locally and through the community in various ways. So we think it's a really powerful piece that we're putting together with the support that we have for the community behind this venture.
Yeah, I think it's I just wanted to reinforce here, Tim, the point that we're not counting on additional tax money. It's not like the Beacon merged and then we're expecting tax dollars to support it. We're in fact expecting the amount of public federal money over time to be decreasing.
But one of the things I think that many individuals as well as foundations and whatnot, they're looking at collaboration as a big piece of when they want to support nonprofit institutions, that collaboration is a big piece of what they're looking for. And this signals that in a great way. And I think that's been one of the things that I think has really attracted people to this idea.
What can be learned or has been learned, do you think, from the operation that exists in Colorado that Jan alluded to, the Rocky Mountain project?
It's a little bit different situation there. There are three different kind of leading collaborations that are going on right now, ours being one of them. The one in Colorado, the iNews nonprofit news organization basically became the newsroom of Rocky Mountain public television. So that was a merger in a sense, but really they just acquired a newsroom that they didn't have before. And then there's a different model in San Diego where there's a nonprofit news organization that now operates as a unit. It's not actually organizationally merged, but functionally it's merged, and it operates as a unit within the newsroom that already existed there that I believe feeds both public television and public radio. So there are different models out there, and ours, I think, is the only real full integration of two existing newsrooms.
Does that put any particular pressure, Tim, do you think, on this operation now, the fact that many people are thinking of it as a potentially a national model?
Well, it can be pressure, but it can also be kind of a guiding force for this. And so, I mean, there's whether or not it's a model for the nation, there's pressure on us to deliver and on what we what our aspirations are in any case. So in this case, I think it's exciting for us to be setting the pace here in St. Louis and to become this model. And it's a great story for us to tell that that we are planting the flag here in St. Louis, a city in a region that has been known historically for great journalism, certainly, as something that that we're planting the flag. And in many ways, it mirrors what we describe as the narrative of what we want to report on through this project. We're talking about telling the story of St. Louis as a city in a region that's reinventing itself. And in many ways, we're trying to reinvent journalism here as well.
Another piece to this, which comes up here, is there's an academic component to this merger as well. And UMSL and the journalism school are involved. And they'll be able to actually do the kind of research that will, I think, help us to understand what's working, what's not working, and then help other people pick up this model if they want to.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, Mark. You're right on cue, because I had an opportunity yesterday to speak with Dean Mills of the Missouri School of Journalism. And, of course, Mizzou was very much involved and concerned, as is the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Let's listen to what he had to say about this relationship and how it would affect the whole situation from the academic component point of view.
It's a great opportunity for students in both the Columbia and UMSL campuses to experience a new kind of journalism, get some hands-on learning with both public radio and an online news operation. And I think the future lies there, so that's a cool opportunity for our students.
How basically is it going to work? Has it been worked out yet?
Well, no, people are still discussing that. I should say, in addition to the possibilities for students, we in the Columbia campus, we're very excited about the research opportunities. Our Reynolds Journalism Institute is going to be very deeply involved in that, and that's an R&D center for citizens in the industry. So this is a perfect kind of experiment for the Reynolds Institute, and we'll be working with Margie and Tam on principally trying to figure out if there is in this someplace a new business model that can support high-quality public affairs journalism. So we'll be experimenting with different ways of producing new revenues for these kinds of operations.
Well, revenue is certainly important. I'm curious about curriculum, though. And you obviously are still working things out, but do you have any sense of where you'd like to see it go in that regard?
Well, that's really UMSL's lead on that. We're very much happy to work with them and their people and see what opportunities there are for our students. But UMSL really has the lead on the curriculum part.
So we don't know yet whether some of the people involved in these merged operations now would be instructing or whether they would be mentoring or we'd be taking interns. That's still to be worked out.
What we've discussed, but only broader strokes, is the opportunity to have some classes on site, whether those would be UMSL classes or Columbia classes or some combination thereof. We don't know. This is all new. We're inventing it. So no, none of that's been decided yet.
Are you as excited about it as we are and some people around the country are watching this thing unfold and making ready for it to evolve somehow?
Well, yeah, we're very excited. Again, nothing like this is going on anyplace else in the country. As I said, the Reynolds Institute, this is what it does as its core mission, is try to figure out how to produce better, newer forms of journalism. And no place in the country have a public radio operation and an independent online news operation merged. And then in addition to that, there is the excitement of the degree of participation by local leaders. To me, that's the really exciting part is that people are saying, we need good journalism in this community, and we're willing to support it, both with our money and, more important, with our participation.
That was Dean Mills, who was the dean of the Mizzou School of Journalism down in Columbia, an advisor to the Reynolds Journalism Institute, talking about the academic component to this merger that we have been talking about. You know, this new technology that is going to be such a part of what is happening here as a result of this merger also gives people the opportunity to weigh in, and not all of them are always favorable. We have this from Michael Evans. He says, academic angle, this is nothing more than tripe, a merger of tax dollars with government-sponsored propaganda. Journalism training, please.
Well, again, tax dollars, there's minimal tax dollars involved. One of the aspects of this, actually, for us to move forward on this, because we're part of the University of Missouri-St. Louis, we took the idea and the whole plan to the Budget and Planning Committee and the at the university level, and they said, go forward on this, but you cannot use any new university dollars to do this. And if you're going to do it, you've got to go out to the community and have the community help pay for this. And that is something that we certainly stand by. My feeling is always that the university is here as we're a service of the university, but their primary mission is to teach students. And whatever academic field it is, that is the mission of the university. And we're a service arm of the university, a public service arm of the university. But by no means are we a mouthpiece for the university. So that you get that off the table as well. But we also understand the dollars that are so scarce for education need to be put into education. Mm-hmm.
Margie, does this mean that you're going to be in a classroom one day teaching students, do you think? Obviously, the details still have to be worked out. But are you and people like Jason Rosenbaum and Joe Manis going to be in the classroom?
Well, I don't know if we'll be in a classroom, but there's kind of excitement around the country of thinking of the teaching of journalism on the model of a teaching hospital, so that you get professionals and students and researchers all under one roof and everybody learns from everybody. And I do very much expect to be participating in some form of that.
And that could happen. There's certainly
a lot of
expertise.
Well,
in this building.
And interestingly enough, if you go around the newsroom, there's several of our staff right now that are teaching journalism or radio production classes already. And so, I mean, I think there may be additional opportunities for folks to do that, but that's already being done by several folks in our newsroom already.
The challenge for journalism education now is to figure out what to teach. You know, you can teach some basic principles, and they apply regardless of the technology you're using. But learning how to live in this new digital world and how to communicate with people is a skill that all of us are figuring out at this point. And I think the students may have some insight into that.
Yeah, they may be, in fact, for some of the older instructors, they may be instructing the instructors in some of that. And it changes so quickly.
Yeah.
I mean,
every
couple of months you're looking at something new. Let me go through another couple of tweets that we have here. Matt writes this, how much of Rex Sinkfield's money is going to the new entity? He, of course, is the man behind the Show Me Institute, a conservative think tank.
Very, very big political contributor. He has, in the past, been a contributor to the Beacon. He was among many contributors, not the largest contributor, and I don't believe that that we have a particular pledge for the merger from him. But I think in looking at Rex Sinkfield or any other donor, you kind of need to look at the situation as a whole. Sometimes people say, you know, to the Beacon, you're in the pocket of your donors. I said, which donors? They don't agree with each other.
It's really important to have a mix of that kind, too, to maintain the credibility of a news organization.
And the credibility, and then also maintain the firewall that exists between any funder and what the content that that folks will hear or read or see with the news coverage that we present. So, and we have, I mean, a very strong ethics and firewall policy here that, and in fact, the building is very symbolic of it here in Grand Center for folks who've been here. The newsroom is on the third floor. The business side is on the second floor, and I have to punch in a secret code to get up here because they're very leery of the general manager coming up to the third floor even to steal a little bit of candy on the desk.
Right.
So, so it's one of those things that, I mean, we strongly abide by a firewall to ensure the independent coverage that we present.
Before we take a next break, a couple more tweets. Let's see. Michael asks, will there be more stories on the air? Will there be more long-form stories? Will video stories be available online? Margie?
I think the answer to those questions will be yes, yes, and yes, although not immediately. We're finding our way with this, and we're learning new skills, and we're figuring out how to best use our time, and we do aspire to do all those things.
But we will be hearing Beacon reporters on the air.
Yes.
Yeah. Another tweet from Michael. Very busy, Michael. he says, will Beacon reporters be doing audio recording while covering stories?
Yes. They're learning to do that now. They've had lesson one in at least five, and we don't expect them to instantly go out and be able to produce the kind of fine radio long-form stories that the radio reporters now can do, but eventually they will pick up those skills. And right now we're teaming up on certain things and learning from each other. And you saw that beginning with yesterday's coverage. We had on air and online versions of a story about the Code Red Project teaching coding to kids.
We also, Jason Rosenbaum collected some amazing audio from a county council meeting, I believe, last night.
Yeah.
That was pretty dramatic audio that folks can hear on our website. That, again, he first day out of the box, and he's doing that. So there's it's very exciting. And I think that's one of the things that I think we talk about the learning aspect from the academic side of this. But we really see ourselves as this new organization as being a learning organization in that way. And so the training component for both staff from the news side is going to be huge from the standpoint of developing data and presenting data in a new way so that people can understand the context in all of this from an information standpoint, as well as the collecting of audio and video and photographs and those types of things, which we think will allow us to tell the story of St. Louis in a much more interesting and a hopefully important way.
I want to talk more about the long-form process in just a moment, but I have to take a break. I have a note here that we have a one-word email from Jeff who just says, excited.
Cool.
As
nice.
Are a lot of people in this building. We'll have to continue this conversation after this break. I'm talking with Margie Freivogel and with Tim Eby. We're talking about the merger of the St. Louis Beacon and St. Louis Public Radio, which formally went into effect yesterday. Back in just a moment, and we'll take your calls. We're waiting to hear from you folks at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Email us at talk@stlpublicradio.org. Send us a tweet at STL on air. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation on the merger between St. Louis Public Radio and the St. Louis Beacon, which was formalized yesterday. With me in studio is Tim Eby, who is the top man at this new organization, if you will, director and general manager. I guess that's the title. Is that right, Tim?
I do what needs to be done.
And Margie Freivogel with us. She is the editor. She'll oversee news operations. I want to talk for a moment about the long form that you both have alluded to, because it seems to me that it's one of the strengths of our station here and has been, and certainly one of the strengths of the St. Louis Beacon and of NPR, because we're able to give consumers of news what they can't get elsewhere, and that is more time and more words, if you will. It's an important component, isn't it?
It is, and some topics are complex. It's nice to be able to present pieces of them in bite-sized form, but sometimes really to understand what's going on, you need the long form. And, you know, we don't want to use it when it doesn't need to be used, but that is definitely one of the main things that we can provide.
How are we going to be working this new operation with NPR? Is anything going to be changing in that regard?
Well, I mean, I think NPR is in a mode of collaboration in a new and different way. I think one example of that is the Lobbying Missouri site that has been created that's part of our site. And I think you've had Chris McDaniel on the show talking about this. Mm-hmm. But we've just created this in the last month or so. Chris had originally created a data project built around taking the public data that's already available from from the Missouri Ethics Commission and putting it into an understandable format. And the folks at NPR actually saw this, what Chris had created, and said, we think we can help you and make it better. So we had some of the digital team from NPR actually flew into to St. Louis, spent a couple of days with our staff talking about how we could develop this site. And now we have this site, lobbyingmissouri.org, that has is up to date of information available on lobbyist gifts to our lawmakers in the state legislature. That is a site that was created by NPR. And the reason NPR is involved with it is they see, well, we'll create it for Missouri first, and then we can create it for any other state station in a state that wants it. And so they're creating this template of information that can be used across the country. So there's the digital piece that NPR is very interested in, and then certainly the audio piece as well. We have our reporters showing up on Morning Edition and All Things Considered and Here and Now on a regular basis. Marshall Griffin, I think, was on has been on a couple of shows this week, even talking about things going on at the state legislature. And we certainly hope to expand that more. So there's a whole lot of interest from NPR in seeing this work because of the idea of collaboration from a news standpoint, national and local.
I was just going to ask a question related to all of this, but Kathy's going to ask it for us. She's calling from Festus. Go ahead, Kathy.
Hi. Yes, you did. You started right in on my question. Thanks for taking my call. And I was concerned about the programs that we love and recently had to fight for a few of them. And are we going to lose those? How will this affect us in our familiarity with the local NPR offerings?
Sure. And I'm sure you're alluding to Fresh Air going away and then coming back during the day probably is one of the things that you're talking about. And I'll touch on this. And it really, it's a matter of taking the local material that we produce and integrating it with the national content that you hear on a regular basis. And you hear this on Morning Edition and on All Things Considered on a regular basis. And then the other programs that we have on during the day with Here and Now and The Takeaway, those provide us with opportunities to insert local pieces within those. So you have an experience that is both that shared national content and local content experience, and that's really the plan that we have. And it's important for us to be, again, as we alluded to earlier in the show, because of the changes in media usage and habits that we feel it's very important to reflect our local community as well as what you're hearing on a national and international basis with the content you get from NPR and the other national producers.
You know, Tim, our friends up in Quincy and Hannibal might be wondering what's in it for me as a result of this change.
Well, and that's, you know, and in that case, we haven't made any investments in putting any people up into that area to cover the news that's up there, although we do provide some substantial reporting from the Illinois State House that will continue to be heard. One of the things that we're discussing, and we're probably going to roll this out after the first of the year, is to bring a Washington, D.C. correspondent back into the mix. The Beacon had Rob Koenig, who's been on this show a lot, but Rob is no longer in D.C. and no longer part of the organization, but we're going to look to hire that position. And obviously, with that coverage, we'll also not only cover the Missouri delegation, but the Illinois delegation there as well. So we'll continue to look at that, but it's just an investment at this point in time. We just have not found the resources to put the investment to have specific coverage for that area on the mark at this point in time.
If you think it's cold here, I bet if we touched base with Rob Koenig, who is in Moscow now, we'd find that it's a little colder where he is right now. We miss Rob. He was a great asset to us. Let's take another call, this one from Raul, calling from St. Louis. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Yes, good day. I hope my phone is clear. I just wanted to quickly ask about this. It seems to me that there's less stringency in terms of you could say some basic core principles of journalism like objectivity or, you know, precluding the use of people or excluding people who were intimately tied into, let's say, a performance or something from doing reviews related to that. And I just wondered if it could be addressed. I mean, I think the Beacon does a lot of good things, but sometimes I just think, wow, there's a bit too much pull from PR operations or, you know, the entities themselves that are being covered. And I'm not paranoid about that generally, but it just seems to have less stringent rules in that area than what I find from the Post.
Are you referring to something specifically? Because from my point of view, we have the same standard.
It just seems I haven't read as much lately, but I read it shortly after it appeared, and then in months on and off. And it just seemed that there was less exclusion of people sort of close to the activity. For instance, I mean, a crude example would be, you know, obviously having a soccer player cover their own match. And it's not to that degree, but it just seems that there are some pretty close ties to some of the material, let's say being reviewed in the arts or, you know, entities that are covered.
Well, I guess I would say my I would dispute the premise of that. But there, we do occasionally have people either interviewed about or writing about their own experiences with something, in which case it would be, of course, disclosed and obvious what their connection was. But we don't have people reviewing their own shows, for sure.
Okay. It just, I remembered something about there were art reviews where people tied to the entities were actually reviewing their own shows.
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Well, so you abide by the same strict outlook on that as, let's say, the Post would.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Raul, thank you so much for the call. Let's bring in Michael calling from Webster Groves. Go ahead, Michael.
Hi. I'd like to see more coverage like, you know, your the Beacon's Del Mar Divide series that they had on. Their newspaper on, well, I guess, internet newspaper. And then the other thing was, I'd hope, like, with this cross-marketing, that you could avoid, you know, like the St. Louis Speaker series is an example, where it's about $300 a person to hear somebody speak, and you're aligned with a for-profit business on that. So that's my comment.
Let me take the first part of that. The coverage of the Del Mar Divide, that's, I think, we'll be able to do more coverage of that type, looking at issues that face this region and have faced the region over long periods of time and kind of figuring out a way to talk to people about what's going on, how people are trying to solve those problems, what's working, what's not working. That's exactly the kind of thing that I think this organization can focus on and that is not going to necessarily happen from other media.
Did you want to get in part of that question?
I wanted to just touch on and actually let Margie elaborate a little bit on it. In terms of the disciplined approach that we're looking at taking and how we're covering stories, and certainly the Del Mar Divide would be a story that would be part of in our wheelhouse on here too. But one of the things over the year that we've been exploring this and coming together is looked at the areas that we really want to focus on, and we're, you know, you call them in the, you know, the lingo today is calling them a vertical, and our focus is going to be very disciplined towards covering these a series of specific issues in St. Louis that we think are important to people.
Yeah, there are certain topics that we're focusing on, politics, education, the economy, primarily in terms of innovation and also how it affects people's well-being, health, science, race, and culture, and the arts. Those are the main topics, but within those topics and also kind of between those topics, we get back to, you know, what is our understanding of this moment in time for St. Louis? And our understanding is the region is at a moment when people are trying to reinvent this place culturally, economically, and in other ways. And our greatest service is to pay attention to that. To understand the historical background to it, to understand the opportunities that exist now, to look at what's happening, figure out what's working, what's not working, celebrate what's going well, and point out what still needs some attention. And I think that kind of thinking over time will give people a sense of understanding and ability to make decisions about things that you don't get from just disconnected bits of information that flow at you all the time in the media.
And we want to, I think, couple that not only with what you hear on the radio or see when you visit a website or look at news on your phone, but also with personal, with in-person events. I think that's one of the really exciting pieces of building the organization as we are with these experts in these specific fields and then tying them to events. For example, we're talking and we'll be announcing, I think, very soon, an event in January where we'll bring our political team together and talk about the 2014 election in the legislative session coming up in Missouri. In-person events that the public can come to, have a conversation, and engage in different ways. I mean, the piece of engagement of going out and talking to the community and interacting in that way is something that we're really focused on doing as part of this this new organization, and it's exciting in that sense. Because I think we can really have not only that interaction with people through digital technologies and on programs like St. Louis on the Air, but also in person, where you can really have a conversation and try to find solutions to some of the pending important issues in this region.
And of course, we're set up perfectly here for that.
Absolutely,
with our center downstairs.
Absolutely,
here at Grand Center. Okay, let's take another call. Bob is joining us from St. Louis. Go ahead, Bob.
Yes, I'm. But I'd like to comment about no classical music and over the air in St. Louis. I really don't think St. Louis can become a world-class city without a classical music station. And when my wife and I travel around the country and listen to the NPR stations, it's very pleasant to hear the classical music that the other stations play. And we get back into the St. Louis area and nothing, just talk.
Bob, thanks for the call. I think it's a little bit off point.
Yeah,
but Tim,
you might want to. I could certainly mention that we do have our classical music service that's on digital radio, HD radio. If you have a computer or a phone, you can pick it up through a web stream as well that we can offer. And of course, I would be remiss to, when the conversation comes up about classical music, to say that we also have the Saturday night concerts with the St. Louis Symphony that are important public services that are heard on this channel every Saturday night that the symphony is performing in Powell Hall as part of their series, and you can tune those in and listen not only on the air but online as well, and those are just well received by the community. So we're certainly trying to fulfill that need in those respects.
Okay, well, we thank him for the call, and stay tuned because there'll be plenty of music. Our time is beginning to get away. I'll give each of you a chance to kind of put a lid on this thing. I started by talking, Margie, about commitment. Your interpretation of what the commitment is now that we have this new organization.
Well, I think we have a commitment to serve the people of the St. Louis region, and we have the opportunity to do that in a lot more ways than we did before. And I hope people will continue to check out what we're doing on air and online and connect with us in social media. And I hope that they'll be part of the process of figuring out how we go forward.
And Tim?
I think it's exciting, again, going back to the idea of planting the flag of journalism, of a new model and a new idea of journalism here in St. Louis. I mean, this is a region that has a great history with that, and it's exciting to be part of being on the leading edge of this. And indeed, the many in the nation are watching of what we're going to be doing here, and it's exciting to be part of that and to leading this effort. And I hope the community is understanding and supportive of that idea and lets us know how we're doing. Because I think that interaction and that two-way communication is going to be key towards success.
And the website is something we certainly want to emphasize here, that the website is going to be where a lot of this is happening. It's not all going to be on
absolutely.
The radio.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. STLpublicradio.org is the URL right now. And if you go to the Beacon site, the STLbeacon.org, there's a link right to our site there. All of the archives of the Beacon are still there, too, which is, you know, 5 years of incredible coverage over that time is still there. And we're looking at importing all of that into a single website, too. So lots of great content there, both on air and online.
Excited, Margie?
Yeah, for sure.
Tim?
Don, thank you. Yes, indeed.
Thank you for being with us. It's a great day for us. I think most people would agree. I said at the beginning we have more muscle now, and I think that's perhaps a good way to put it. Tim Eby, Margie Freivogel, thanks for being with us.
Thanks.
Good luck to you both. Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with Israel's Consul General at the Midwest about a variety of issues, including the country's diplomatic relations with Iran, Syria, and Palestine. We'll also explore youth engagement in politics during an increasing time of partisanship and ideological conflict. conflicts. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.